This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we're speaking with Troy D'Ambrosio, Executive Director of the Lassonde Entrepreneurial Institute at the University of Utah. This is a very exciting time for the university, and particularly for students studying entrepreneurship. Years of hard work and planning are starting to pay big dividends for the state, for the university, and for all of our students. Just a few weeks ago, the Princeton Review named both the U's undergraduate program and its graduate program to their list of the top 25 entrepreneurship programs in the nation. That's impressive. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. 2016 is set to be one of the most exciting times in recent U history with the opening of its Lassonde Studios, a 160,000 square foot center that combines space for living for 400 full-time residents. It also has space for multiple classrooms and for what they call innovation laboratories. It's one of the nation's biggest and boldest programs in entrepreneurship education, and it's happening right here in our backyard at the University of Utah. Troy D'Ambrosio, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Doug, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
So I shared in the open just a couple weeks ago, the Princeton Review came out with their list of the top 25. You did very, very well. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. We're pretty excited about that. It's been a while. We've been in the top 25 for a little bit now, but moving up each year and got our undergraduate program ranked this year as well.
And what I want to talk about, you've been in the rankings for several years. It takes a lot of work. You know, you get recognized in these studies more likely than not after years of preparation, things that you guys put in place. You've been in your position since around 2002. What were some of the things that the U's been doing over the last decade, the last 15 years, to put yourself in this position today?
So the rankings are pretty interesting because they're a little different than other rankings for schools. One of the things they rank us on is they ask us to measure how many students have started companies and how much money they raised over 1 year, 5 years, and 10 years. So you have to have a pretty good longitudinal history of getting student startup companies out there and measuring those and tracking those. And so really it does take a while to get placed into the rankings now. And so we started a program back in 2002 where we were taking graduate students and partnering with university faculty inventors and using that as a forum to teach entrepreneurship and commercialization. And out of that really got a process developed to help students figure out how to start companies.
And you mentioned 2002 is when that focus really started. That's when you joined, if my data is right, with the University of Utah in your current role. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What was the U's thinking? I mean, it's a institute of higher learning. They have a fiduciary duty to the state. They wear many hats. But yet they're also a business, and they have to think about how do we differentiate ourselves? How do we decide what we're going to be best in class at? Go back to 2002 when the decision was made that entrepreneurship is one of the areas we should focus on. Why do you think that rose to the top of the different things they were considering?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting history because Jack Britton, who had come in as the new dean of the business school back in 99, had come from University of Texas at Dallas and really looked at the market here and looked at what the business school was doing and the kind of degrees and programs it was offering and said, Salt Lake's a very different climate than economically than Texas and Dallas, and that he was at a business school there that was producing MBAs to go to work for big Fortune 500 companies and came here and said, we're kind of in an isolated area. We have a very entrepreneurial community. We have a lot of people that want to stay here and have their own businesses, but we don't have large corporate employers. And what we're missing is a business school that is teaching entrepreneurship to meet that need of our students. And so he initially asked me to come on an advisory board. And then as I sold my second company, asked me to really come and put together an entrepreneurship program and help students do that and develop something that added that component into the business school. So it was a reaction to a market need.
And it's probably one of the keys for success. That's exactly how it should be. You know, what is our market? Remind us, take us back in history. What was the U like? What was the business school like? What were the main programs that the U had back before one of the focuses was entrepreneurship?
So it had the very standard traditional business, classroom experiences. So you had degrees in management, accounting, finance, and very standard. And I think if you look back at that time frame, business schools and universities in general were just starting to look at entrepreneurship as curriculum, as programs. And really, business schools had been traditionally designed to educate you to go to work for somebody else, not to create your own company. And that's taken a while to get absorbed into curriculum, to get absorbed into programs, because it's had to adapt and change and develop theory and curriculum around those things. So in 2002, 2001, we were pretty standard traditional business school, very well ranked in accounting and finance and other degree areas, but we didn't have an entrepreneurial program that really complemented those other degrees.
And were there other universities that were already best in class in entrepreneurship? Were there role models that you could copy, or did you really have to invent this from fresh cloth?
There were a couple of universities that we looked at, and that Brigham Young University has a very, very good program and has for a number of years, but you've had Babson and a few universities around, and some of them that had formal programs, many that had informal programs that were recognized in that, but we really tried to look at what our strengths and weaknesses were as a community and as a university and really create something that fit our market and fit our students and fit our university well. So we, in essence, really created something different and something unique that fit the university culture the best.
Yeah, and speaking of culture, you know, that's an important piece. And universities have very strong cultures throughout the nation. I have found this. It's really hard to get. As you know, my wife, Linda Wells, worked at the University of Utah for several years. Before that, she worked 12 or 13 years at Stanford. So tangentially, as a spouse of somebody that spent a large part of her career in universities, the cultures tend to be strong. It tends to be very challenging to get the existing organization to embrace new, bold ideas, like I'm sure entrepreneurship felt back then. How readily embraced was the idea of going to entrepreneurship, and how did you guys, you and Jack and others, over time get people on board that this is a great direction for us to be heading?
Yeah, what I think was the catalyst is we started from the student perspective, and Pierre Lassonde, who endowed our program, was always about making the student experience unique and really coming at from the student side of things. So that's, I think, what really allowed us to do is we created from a bottom up movement of this is what students wanted, what they desired, and then we moved it into the broader university. And you know, you mentioned Stanford, where your wife was, where Linda was, and you know, you look at Stanford, and that's one of the models obviously everybody looks at. And we looked at it and said, well, we're never going to recreate the Bay Area ecosystem.
A lot of people want to. It's very challenging.
Sure. Yeah. And we looked at it and said, there's no way. That grew up organically around it. The universities played a role in it, but how do we do that? And so what we did is started looking at internalizing some of the things that the community did in the university. So taking university technologies and trying to start companies around them internally in the university rather than let external people do that and kind of be the catalyst for that. And that became a very successful program for us.
If you're just joining us this morning, our guest is Troy D'Ambrosio, Executive Director of the Lassonde Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. So we're talking about the early days when the decision was made to focus on entrepreneurship. What were some of the first programs that the university rolled out as kind of a coordinated program to start moving you in that direction?
So there were really two things we started back in the early 2000s. One, we started a pretty traditional business plan competition. But I think what was unique about that is we opened it up statewide to students to compete with their ideas from any university or college, public or private in the state. And so that was Jack's really vision. Let's make it a statewide competition, kind of have a broader competition. So that was a unique thing. The other thing that I was specifically brought up to do was this technology commercialization piece, where we would pull MBA students, science and engineering, PhD students, law school students, we'd partner them with university faculty inventors and look at the commercial potential out of ideas coming out of the university labs. And we became very good at taking those ideas and moving them forward and getting companies started and raising capital for those businesses. And that became a very unique and signature program for the University of Utah, and still is.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, I think it was two questions ago, Pierre Lassonde. He's a very important figure at the business school, at the university in Utah as a whole. And we're going to talk about him multiple times in today's discussion. But tell us about his early involvement. So it sounds like when the focus on entrepreneurship was developed you were starting to roll it out. It sounds like Pierre was there from the beginning. Is that the case, or how did Pierre get involved in this focus?
Pierre really founded the idea and really approached Jack Britton, and they together kind of baked up the idea of creating an entrepreneurial program at the University of Utah. And I just became the person that got to lead the charge, which was great. But Pierre's very unique in the sense that he's got an undergraduate degree in engineering from a university in Canada and got his MBA at the University of Utah. And his vision was always to pull science and engineering together with business and create an interdisciplinary program. And that was very unique as we looked at entrepreneurial programs across the country. They either were in the business school or they were in the engineering school, but they didn't kind of mix them together. And because of Pierre's background, his wife also received her master's degree in nuclear physics at the University of Utah. So had science, engineering, and business, and wanted to do things that combined those together. So it was his vision to pull this interdisciplinary program together from the very get-go.
You know, we're very fortunate that he did come back to the U and say, I want to do this at the University of Utah, because obviously it's had a big, big positive impact on the University of Utah. You know, Pierre's also unusual in that his first college degree is a Bachelor of Arts. So he actually went that route before getting a Bachelor of Science. Tell us a little bit about Pierre's background. He's made several very large donations. I think back in 2002 during this time period with Jack Britton, it was $12 or $13 million, which is a big, big donation.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. So actually, he started off with a $50,000 donation. So we had this idea, and he said, great, I'm an investor, and I'm going to de-risk this first. I'm going to test this and see if it works. So his first actual donations were $50,000 a year for a couple of years. And then when we proved the concept up, he initially gave a $3 million donation, and then he endowment, and then he gave another $10 million. So we really had to prove ourselves to Pierre. And I think that actually was part of what made us good, is rather he didn't just overfund us right from the beginning. And there's a university recently that just shut down their entrepreneurial program because they spent all their money. And we had just the other side of the equation. He said, come up with a concept, show me you can make it work just like an investor would, de-risk it, and I'll keep investing in you if you keep showing results. And that's what he's done over the years.
You know, that's really interesting. I didn't know that part. As part of my research, I know not only was, as you point out, he put in some money, see how it goes, then put in more money, but it appears he was also supporting multiple universities, some big donations, $25 million to York University and $5 million to the University of Western Ontario. Those are some big donations to universities. Do you think he was kind of seeding different programs to see which one was going to yield the biggest results, or was it really a matter of supporting multiple organizations that are doing complementary things?
It's been a little of both. And so prior to his donations at the University of Utah, he'd done some other donations at University of Toronto and things. But since our program, he's actually, as he's done things at York University, he's doing an entire engineering school there. And it's called the Renaissance Engineering Program, and it's an entrepreneurial education program. And he's actually had me go up there several times. I've been up there consulting with the dean and saying, taking best practices, and we do some collaborative activities. I actually have the president of Western University coming here in January to talk with us about our program. So we have this little club of universities that Mr. Lassonde and his family has donated to and created programs in that we collaborate and work with and try and make each other better and share. They're complementary in that we're the business school component. He's done different programs at different schools, mining at Toronto, engineering at York. And so he's funded different programs, but we're all trying to share best practices and work together.
You know, as I was doing some research for today's interview, I was surprised to find that Pierre is also what's called a chartered financial analyst, which is the top designation in the investing world, which is the world I work in. And so I did a little more digging. Tell the story about how Pierre and his business partners built their fortune initially.
So Pierre was in the construction side at Bechtel and then got a CFA and went on the investment side and became a gold analyst. And he was always interested in gold. And they actually bought a mining claim back. And it tells the story about buying a mining claim. And they had some money. They were looking to buy some assets.
Not that much money. It was $2
million. $2
million.
Yeah, and he saw it in a paper in Nevada. And he happened to be out there. And the person that owned that mining claim was here in Salt Lake. And so he drove from Reno to Salt Lake, got here on a Monday morning, negotiated with the guy bought the mining claim, spent all $2 million they had in the treasury, and then a couple of hours later, somebody else showed up to buy the mining claim too. So Pierre got there just in time and executed on it and took the action, and that mining claim's become, he said, has paid out over $1 billion in royalty to his company. So it's under the Barrick Goldstrike mine out in Nevada. So he calls himself Lucky Pierre, but there was a lot of strategy behind that. They'd done a lot of analysis, but it came from his CFA experience in being an analyst in the gold industry, looking at the industry and understanding it.
I didn't know the story about reading about the gold claim in the newspaper. It's not for the faint at heart. We're not recommending that for anybody. It worked out very well for, as you call him, Lucky Pierre. But for the average person, probably don't be looking in the newspaper for your next investment idea. We're going to come back to Pierre. He's been very active in the university, very generous. There's some exciting things going on that he's been a big supporter of and has made possible. But I want to, before we go there, talk about some other folks that have been instrumental in the university. When my wife was there, the new building was completed and the students moved in there. And it was such a positive impact on the students' life. It's amazing the space that you work in, the space that you live in, for all of us, has a big impact. And I think that was a very big positive. I know the business school is called the David Eccles School of Business. I know the building's called the Spencer Fox Eccles Business Building. Tell us about the Eccles family and their involvement in helping to build the vision that we're starting to see today.
Yeah, the Eccles family obviously is incredibly important, not only to the business school, but the University of Utah in total and the community in total. And, you know, really, David Eccles is really Utah's first entrepreneur, and the business school that's been named after him and the family that has supported it, that new facility. And that's not only that, but scholarships and things that they've brought to the community really is the foundation, the base that the Lassonde program has been built on. And we wouldn't be where we are if they hadn't built that base for us. And we're very confident we're part of the business school. We're a proud part of that community and that environment and represent that Eccles spirit of being community and be community supporters and being entrepreneurs in this community.
The Eccles family's done a lot of very good things, not just for the University of Utah, but just statewide. We're fortunate to have that family here in the state. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more with Troy D'Ambrosio, Executive Director of the Lassonde Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. I'm Doug Wells. Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. Troy D'Ambrosio is the Executive Director of the Lassonde Entrepreneurial Institute at the University of Utah, and we're fortunate to have him as our guest this morning. We were talking about the Eccles family before break. We recently had Jim Sorensen on as a guest, and I know that there's the global impact investing sign that's on the building as well. How did you and the Sorensen family get together? I know impact invest. We had Jim as a guest. He talked about the importance of impact investing. How did that get blended into the university as well?
So that's part of the vision, both Jack Britton and followed on by Taylor Randall as dean of the business school, to really create experiential applied learning experiences for students in the business school at the University of Utah. And so Taylor Randall and Mr. Sorensen got together and looked at some opportunities to be able to create some additional areas of real applied learning experience for students and came together and formed the Sorensen Global Impact Investing Center. And, you know, it really provides this unique experience, I think something that's one of the very unique assets we have at the University of Utah and the business school for students to go understand what global impact investing is about and do it real time and applied while they're at school.
You know, another person we've had as a guest is Taylor Randall, who was the dean when my wife joined. And when he was recruiting Linda, I benefited from some of Taylor's charm when he was trying to recruit Linda over. I got some of the Taylor Randall charm to the husband of Linda Wells to help convince that to take place. I'm a big fan of Taylor's. As I mentioned, we had him on as a guest about a year ago now. And I asked Taylor to mention a program that maybe the public had not heard of that he was particularly proud of at the business school. And I loved his answer. He talked about business ethics and the importance of business ethics. And it's not something that gets a lot of press, but yet it's really, really important. I completely agree about with him on. I want to start talking about some of the programs that you guys are doing now that folks are familiar with, but I want to start with what's a program or two that maybe people aren't familiar with that you think is really having a great impact for our students?
Yeah, we have a really unique program called Get Seated, which is donation from Zions Bank that allows us to give a student a small prototyping grant, business development grant. It's not an equity investment. It's not a loan. It's a complete grant. The student doesn't have to have a business even formed. They come up with an idea, and they come up with a test for it. They have a hypothesis that they want to test, a milestone that helps allow move their business forward. So they might need $200 to build a prototype, or $500 to get some customer voice of customer measurements, or $1,000 to get a website going, and we can give them a grant to just move that idea forward. And what we've seen is this has been an enormous benefit to these students. That little bit of money that lets them test an idea, kind of fail early, fail fast, fail cheap, if that's it, or accelerate the idea and pivot and move it forward. And it's really been a unique program that doesn't exist anywhere else in the United States, and is really increase the number of businesses, the speed at which they're developing, and the breadth that we're opening them to. It's open to any student on campus. So we have students from sociology and anthropology as well as business and engineering that gets those grants.
I love that answer as well. And what I really like about it is a lot of folks have good ideas, but it takes this spark to go from a good idea to say, okay, I'm going to pursue this as a business. And oftentimes what it takes to do that isn't really that much money. But if you don't have the money, if you're a student, and when I was a student, I was on a very tight, I didn't have the money. And sometimes $500, a couple thousand dollars can make all the difference between going forward and not. So I think it's a great example. Getting to your core programs that you have at the University of Utah, as I talk to students, and I try to go back once a year, sometimes twice, and talk to the student body and just kind of share them a little bit about my journey and some things, I'm just blown away at how many different programs that they have to pursue if they're interested in it. Are there three or four pillars that most of these programs revolve around, or how do you think about the core of the program today?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we've kind of built this in reverse. And so, as I mentioned, we started with a business plan competition for student ideas. And then we started looking at how do we fill into that. So we said, if you have an idea and you've baked it pretty far, present to us and we'll judge it and we'll give you some money. Well, you can win some money. It's almost like presenting to a venture capitalist or an angel investor. And then we started looking at things that would allow students to get to there. And so we said, how do we meet you as a student where you are? As you mentioned, you have an idea. What do you do at the initial phases? And so we started looking at things that we could do with that. And so one of the things we created was a program called Bench to Bedside, which was to help medical device innovation take place at the University of Utah that we do with the Center for Medical Innovation. So prototyping grants to develop medical devices. And then we started saying, okay, how do you even come up with an idea? How do you generate that idea? So we do innovation tournaments and ideation tournaments. So come up with an idea. How do you think about it? How do you vet it? And then, okay, now you've got the idea. What do you do? And we mentioned the prototyping grant, but maybe the first thing you need to do is go talk to some customers and see if that really is a problem at somebody else's. So how do you go about doing that? We give a workshop on how to go do customer identification. We do a workshop on how to do app development. So maybe you can create that first generation of app yourself without spending any money, and then go show it to some customers. So we're trying to evolve the entrepreneurial idea forward, and then hopefully help them launch the idea and the company out of the University of Utah.
You know, you and I met a couple times this spring, and we'll talk about what we were meeting on later in the interview. But each time I would leave, you know, just in our small talk, I'd ask about the different things you're working on. I'd leave exhausted. I mean, your plate is so incredibly full with these various programs. How do you coordinate that all?
So one of the things we've done really uniquely that have allowed us to scale up the programs is we run them all with students on scholarship. And so we have this year 85 students on scholarship that run different programs for other students. And so we have leadership experiences for students, and we have a model of a see one, do one, teach one. And we've been able to scale up the programs for students by saying, here's a scholarship for you as a student. Run a set of workshops for other students. Find experts from the community to come in and host a workshop for them, and we'll give you the resources and marketing budget and things to do that. So we've been able to grow up by using students. And, you know, we're going to go from 85 students on scholarship this year to over 200 next year. And so
really,
we're continuing to grow the program that way and have found that that peer-to-peer program to be very, very effective.
I knew there had to be a secret because you've got a very tranquil office, right? You can tell you're organized, you have it under control. But you talk about these programs, and I'm on the newsletter that the business school sends out. I see all these programs, and I'm like, how does Troy stay so calm? Okay, well, having 200 students helping helps out a great deal towards that. So that's the secret under the hood there. I didn't know that, so thanks for sharing that. Let's talk a little bit about your story. You mentioned earlier, before joining the University of Utah, Jack recruited you there. You were running your own businesses. I know you've been involved in several businesses. Tell us some of the things you were doing before you took over the mantle at the University of Utah.
Yeah, so I had two startup business experiences with my brothers in the telecommunications area. So one was in the broadband business in Latin America, where we actually had operations in 10 Latin American countries and had several hundred employees. And then prior to that, did a wireless business here in the U.S. that we sold to Sprint. And so I had that entrepreneurial startup experience, but I also had 10 years with American Stores Company, big Fortune 500 company headquartered here
sold
in Salt Lake.
Sold to Albertsons. Lund. Were you there when Victor Lund was there?
Yeah, was there, and so kind of, and so I kind of overlapped with Vic for a period of time, and so yeah, I had a very great. So I had corporate experience, startup experience, and had a little bit of mix of all of those things, and even at one point was deputy chief of staff to the mayor of Salt Lake here, and so I've had a little bit of experience doing a number of things, and brought all of those elements to bear at the University of Utah.
So you know, my take is I was just doing some background here is you've chosen very wisely the companies you've chosen to associate with. You mentioned American Stores, which obviously got sold to Albertsons. You also worked for Wasatch Advisors, which is a powerhouse mutual fund company, best known for small cap investing, in my opinion. They're one of the top firms in the country, if not the world, at what they do. As you kind of looked at your career and deciding, what opportunity did you want to do next? How did you choose the company that you wanted to go after and you wanted to associate with?
Yeah, I did. I really did pick or try to put myself in a position to create opportunity for myself. And so I would volunteer. And part of what I brought to my experience at the University of Utah for students is when I was an undergraduate studying political science at the University of Utah, I worked on political campaigns. And so I took something I was passionate about. I was studying at the University of Utah, and then I volunteered in activities. And I helped run a campaign and help get a person elected and really created my own job. And that put me in a position where people saw me in a different light. They saw what I could do and how I could perform and how I could act. And that from that position in the mayor's office, I got to meet Mr. Skaggs. They hired me into American Stores Company. From that, I got to meet the people at Wasatch Advisors. So it was that experiential activity that people saw that portfolio of things that I could do in addition to have the credential from the University of Utah that allowed me to do that. And so when I talk with students about the reason you're involved in these entrepreneurial activities is you may be presenting to a group of judges or meeting with a venture capitalist or meeting with an employer, and you get to tell a story about yourself, and they've seen what you can do. And so we try and create those applied learning and that story, that portfolio of skills. And that's really what's allowed me to work for an American Stores and a Wasatch Advisors and then start my own companies.
Yeah, I'm very impressed by that group of companies. We need to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to keep talking about that. If you're just joining us today, our guest is Troy D'Ambrosio, Executive Director of the LaSalle Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. So it's always a compliment when a top-tier firm comes and says, hey, we'd like you to think about joining our company. And I suspect you had several of those opportunities, and it's how you choose which ones are the ones that are most exciting. That's as big of a factor in your success throughout your life. And this is not just a show on entrepreneurship, it's also a business show. So help us, how did you know those were when the folks from Wasatch Advisors says, hey, we'd like you to come join us, or when Mr. Skaggs said, hey, I'd like you to join me at American Stores, how did you make the decision that was the right opportunity for you?
Yeah, both of those were really departures from what I'd done historically, right? And so I was in the mayor's office, you know, where I'd always thought I'd see myself in this position, and then one day I get a call out of the blue from, you know, Sam Skaggs and says, come and join American Stores. I had never taken a business class. I had no idea. And I thought, you know, this must be a sign. That was like being called up into the big leagues, right?
it's a huge compliment, obviously.
And so how could I pass up that opportunity? And same thing with Wasatch Advisors. It was actually, we'd sold our first startup company. I had known the people at Wasatch because I was doing investor relations for American Stores. And so I was talking to the analysts at Wasatch and got to know them over that period of time. And then that opportunity came up and I said, how could I not go with a world-class class investment firm that's here in Salt Lake. I don't have any experience there, but I've got some investor relations experience. And they both of those, I must both kind of want Sam Skaggs at American Stores and Sam Stewart at Wasatch Advisors, because they took me in and were mentors for me and taught me and let me flourish in both of those environments.
I'm glad you mentioned the topic of mentors. When I talk to young people and help them think through which opportunity they should go with, there's many things to factor, and I think the mentor is probably one of the most important. Who are you going to work with? How involved are they? What kind of mentorship are you going to get? And if it means you leave some money on the table to get the right mentor, I think that's the right decision each and every time throughout your career.
I actually, in both of those job changes, that when I went from the city to American Stores and then Wasatch, I actually took a cut in pay at both of those times of what I was making. And so it was a very conscious decision to say, and it's also got me out of my comfort zone. Places I was, and I thought, well, either I'm going to succeed or I'm going to fail, but if I don't try, I'm never going to know. And so I took that risk, not really thinking about it in those terms. In retrospect, it makes sense, but taking a risk to try something new and get a broader portfolio of experience and see if I could flourish in an area where I didn't have any really background at all.
Yeah, most people listening on the radio might know Troy D'Ambrosio best from your auto dealership. You used to own a Chrysler Jeep dealership that you sold in 2007. So not only would I compliment you on the companies that you chose to work for earlier in your career, but your timing on getting out of the auto industry in hindsight looks perfect. First, why did you decide to get into that business? And then I want to ask how you timed it so perfectly to get out in 2007.
So my brother and I had done two startup companies, like I say, one in the wireless business here in the U.S. and one in the broadband business in Latin America. And in 2002, the telecom market was a disaster. The internet bubble had burst. The telecom market had burst. And so we were looking for other businesses to invest in. And we'd done two startups, and we said, let's not do a startup this time, and let's do something and buy an existing business and buy existing operations and cash flow. And so we looked at probably 100 different business opportunities. We had known the car business and had some relatives and family members, including our father, that had been in the car business. So we had a basic understanding, but they're hard assets to buy. They're very difficult to get a hold of them because they are very good businesses. 2002, in the recession, ended up being a very good time. We were able to buy that franchise. It was a great business investment for all of us. The economy turned around, so we kind of bought it at the bottom of the market. The timing, I got a compliment to my brother, who's always been very good at. He started looking at where the market was going, and also right at that time, the Daimler bought Chrysler, and then they sold Chrysler out. And we kind of said, well, it's not good for Daimler to own anymore. Maybe it's not good for us to own anymore. And so we timed it and sold it right at that time. And I can't say we had perfect timing, but it was pretty good.
Well, you owe your brother a very nice Christmas present each and every year.
It's coming up
on that time. The timing was perfect. One of the last questions on your personal journey, and then I want to get back to the University of Utah. I'm turning 52 here in a couple months, and how you choose to spend the last chapters of your career, right? Hopefully I have another two decades of working, but you do think about, what is the impact I want to have? What's the legacy I want to leave behind? How did you decide that entrepreneurship was still an important chapter that you wanted to write in your story?
Yeah, I think once the one of the great things about being an entrepreneur, Doug, you've done this, is that once you're able to create your own future, your own job, your own destiny, it's very empowering. And so it gives you a lot of opportunities. And the interesting thing about the University of Utah experience for me is there was no entrepreneurial program up there. And so I've been an entrepreneur within the University of Utah. I've got to create and use that creative energy and create something new. And so as I looked at that opportunity, and a couple of years ago, my brother and I have started another company. It's a public company. It's a organic fertilizer mining company in central Utah. And we took that company.
You say that almost as an aside. Oh, by the way, I also started a company. So, it was Potash, right?
Potash, and it's Crystal Peak Minerals. And he's the CEO of that company. And there was a point was, do I go back and join him in that endeavor, or do I stay at the University of Utah? And I really had to weigh that heavily. And I said, what do I want to do with the last 10, 20 years of my life? And I was just having such a great time working with students and helping them move their ideas forward, playing that role as mentor, having all the fun of starting companies and being creative, that I decided that I'd spend my end of my career here at the University of Utah.
Well, the university and the state's fortunate that you did decide to make that decision. There's lots of smart people in mining, and the future of our students is really important. And I would argue that what the University of Utah did was really hard, that transition into entrepreneurship, like you mentioned. You mentioned the Bay Area and how that kind of developed organically. When it doesn't develop organically, it takes a lot of work to put the pieces together. What were some of the more challenging pieces for you to put together, for you and your team to put together, so that we could be where we are today?
Yeah, I think the more difficult things to put together have been understanding the process and engaging students in general, right? Is to kind of getting over the there's a psychology and terminology. You know, anytime you use entrepreneurship, people have this kind of vision in their head, the kind of the lone wolf, Mark Zuckerberg, Steven Jobs type of entrepreneur. And I think that's really it puts up a huge barrier to people trying and taking risks and just doing things. And you're going to fail a lot when you do this, right? And the other thing was to be able to say, well, let's create a place where it's okay to try and fail, because universities are not really known for that, right? It's not to go try something and fail. And you can't – that's a hard thing to integrate into curriculum and to grading, is to say, well, here's your idea. You tried and you failed. How do you grade that? And so I think those were the kind of things we had to figure out how to put those, is to say, this isn't just about that one person. It's about a team. It's about organizing a team. And it's about trying and failing and learning from that and, you know, understanding what you learn from that. So I think getting the psychology and the around it and the people to think about it differently has been really the hardest challenge. It's not been resources. It's not been, you know, it's really been getting people to say, why should I do this and take on that risk and try these things.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the subject of, you know, that you have to try several things. There's failure involved. There are these icons out there that I think make it harder for people to believe they too can be an entrepreneur. You mentioned Steve Jobs. One of the impetuses for this show was when I was in business school, I was fortunate enough to have dinner at a friend's house with Steve Jobs. It was 1993. He had been fired from Apple about a decade earlier. He had started Next. That was not going so well. Mm-hmm. He had to lay off over half of his Pixar employees. Toy Story had not come out yet. And the Steve Jobs I met that night was one that was really in a little bit of turmoil with himself over who Steve Jobs is and how he was going to make his next chapter a success. And that has been one of the most motivational things to me, to see a man who ultimately created something so great, but to have to see him in when he was struggling and wasn't so sure of himself. Very motivating and liberating. And failure is just part of the entrepreneurial process. I think one of the things the Bay Area has that I'd like to see incorporated more in the state of Utah is acceptance of failure. It's part of the process. I think there still is a bit of a stigma over failure in the state of Utah. First, do you agree with that? And do you think there's things we could do to speed up that process where we realize the kids that go into entrepreneurship, it's an irrational decision. If they go into investment banking, if they go into management consulting, there is an 80% chance they're going to succeed in those fields. If they go into entrepreneurship, there is an 80% chance, even if they do everything right, that they're not going to meet that level of success. How do we embrace that and encourage it as a reality?
Yeah, I think that's I share your view that we quite don't have the entire ecosystem here of saying, you try one, you fail, it's okay, try another one, right? And you've learned from that. People will invest in you. People always want to invest in the success, but sometimes it has only breed after two or three failures. And so we're not quite there. I think, you know, one of the things that we are trying to do for students and say, okay, this is the place to start trying stuff and failing, right? Nobody rides a bike the first time, right? You fall off, you get up, you keep going until you figure out your balance. And so what a better place to do it than while you're at a university. And we've tried to take a very broad view and work with not only the University of Utah, but all of our partners in the state, you know, public and private, with BYU and Utah State and Snow College that we work with, and say, let's get students the opportunity to try those things now. And maybe you have your two or three failures while you're a student, so when you get to that one and you can go talk to a venture capitalist or part of the other people you have to convince is the team you have to build. And if you haven't been successful, what makes you, like you say, it's an irrational decision. Join my team. By the way, I've had two failures. trust me, this one's going to work, right? So you have those things that you have to overcome. And we're not quite there. We're getting to kind of the critical mass of people and experiences and knowledge of people that have done that. And I think that you were right on that, like I said, right at that critical mass where the community is going to take off in that regard.
You know, it's so funny. I go back to the Bay Area a couple times a year. I have friends there. In the younger generation, the kids that are coming out now, it's almost a badge of honor for them to say, oh, yeah, I had this feather. And, oh, yeah, I raised $2 million and blew through that in 2 years, and now I'm on my third one. And I think it's healthier, actually. I mean, there's a right way to fail and there's a wrong way. And as long as folks are failing the right way, I tell entrepreneurs, you're more valuable to me if you've had a failure or two and you've learned from those and you failed the right way. Now you've got all those lessons behind you. Hopefully you're not going to make those mistakes again, and you're more likely to succeed. If you're just joining us this morning, our guest is Troy D'Ambrosio, Executive Director of the LaSalle Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. Let's switch gears. 2016 is going to be a very exciting year for the University of Utah, for the business school in particular. Tell our audience what the LaSalle Studios are.
So we're creating a really unique environment, and I use that term instead of building because it's more than just the physical structure. It's a 400-bed residential facility for students to live on campus, combined with a 20,000-square-foot innovation garage. So this, think about that garage as the library for the innovator, for the entrepreneur, for the tinker to come in and build ideas, build teams, create companies, launch companies, and learn to the mindset of an entrepreneur. And then there's 400 students that are going to get to live in a very immersive environment that's combining that together. So we're looking to attract the top student entrepreneurs from around the country to come and live at the University of Utah and really create the next generation of great ideas and great companies and great teams at the University of Utah.
What's your biggest dream out of this?
You know, my biggest dream is that we create a cohort of this incredible group of students that have come through the University of Utah that have this phenomenal experience and go on and get great jobs, build great companies, and come back and contribute to our community. And I think that's really, you know, we talk about the Bay Area. We think we're really a key part of the ecosystem of building this entrepreneurial environment in the state, in that if we can really attract the top students, both the students in the state of Utah to come with us as well as outside of the state of Utah, come here, get a great educational experience, and go back into this community and contribute, whether they're employees at companies or whether they're starting our own companies, that's our dream, is really to be part of that success of that, what the university can contribute to the community.
It feeds on itself. It's very much a cycle. And I liked how you described those pieces, including at the end of it, you know, the entrepreneurs go out, they have a success, and they stay in the community, and then they give back to the next group. I think that's really critical. There's a lot of really unique things with the LaSalle Studios. And I'll mention one or two that I know, but you probably know many more, obviously, than I do. One of which is, I guess the sleeping space or the is kind of modular, and it's on wheels, and you can choose which group you want to have your living space next to.
Right. So we've done a lot of discussion with students. So we've interviewed and talked with them and say, how do you want to live? What environment do you want to live in? And so each of the floors, there's four floors of residential, and each floor has three different kind of living environments in it. One is traditional kind of single and double beds. We have four-bedroom loft-style apartments. So imagine a startup team that's together that are students that they can live together and work on their idea and be going to school at the same time. And then this modular concept where we have 20 units in a cluster, individual private rooms that are all themed around. We've really talked with our video gaming program, our computer science program. These are people that may come together and code for 20 hours and then want to go sleep and have some privacy. And so they have their own individual room where they can go and sleep and get some rest and go to school and study. And so we're trying to figure out, and all of those floors are actually designed and all those rooms are actually designed so that we can modify them and adapt to both technology and what the student demand is. And so we've tried to really make the building reflect what the students are, which is this adaptive, changing environment all the time, technology changing, students changing, student interest changing. And so we want the building to very much be very much reflective of the entrepreneurial spirit and the entrepreneurial environment.
I'll tell you, I wish my living pod my freshman year in college had wheels on it. We were assigned a roommate, and it wasn't the world's greatest match. It wasn't horrible, but it would have been nice to have wheels. Is the whole idea there just kind of this social proof, and the folks that have the ideas, the folks that are building community, well, it'll be easier for them to build that community?
Yeah, we're really think about this as what we call an intentional community, right? We want the students that come in here with an intent to do specific things, to collaborate, to find something they're passionate about, and to take action on it. And if you think about other buildings and in other environments, if you go in the library, you know, you go in there and your intent is to study. And if you see somebody studying, you don't walk up to them and say, hey, what are you working on? In this building, we want that to be the opposite. We want somebody, if you're walking by, you say, that looks really cool. What are you working on? Oh, I'd love to join your team. I'd love to be part of that. Or grab somebody that's walking by and saying, I'm really having trouble figuring this out. Can you help me, right? And so we want the students to come in there. And we talk about the environment because it's the culture that really, that type of culture of collaboration, of vision, of sharing a passion and coming together in a unique space and doing it is really what's going to be the most important thing. The physical space is almost is really secondary. It's really the culture of the people in there.
It's secondary, but it is important. What about on the collaboration standpoint? Is it going to be just business school students, or is it open to, you mentioned coding, is it open to computer science? Is it open to engineering? Is it open to medical students?
It's open to any student from any discipline in the University of Utah. So that's one of the unique things about it. And it's also open from freshman to graduate students. So it's one of the few places where we have upper class and graduate housing on campus. So imagine on a floor where you have a graduate student in the video gaming program with an undergraduate business student that's interested in the business of video gaming, with a fine arts student that's the creative partner with that, that's adding music and creativity to it. But maybe there's a political science student like myself that loves to play video games that's the test subject for the idea they're coming up, and they're living together on a floor and they're collaborating in a very, very unique way. And I think that interdisciplinary nature of our program from Pierre's vision early on has been one of the secrets to our success in this building. It was really the culmination of bringing that in. And I'll tell you a really interesting story the other day. And I had a student show up from Texas who's going into naval sciences, and I said, so why are you applying to live here and be in this environment? He goes, I want to take an entrepreneurial attitude into the Navy. And I thought, that's exactly the kind of person we want to attract to the University of Utah, attract to our program, and have come and take advantage of this while they're here at the university, well, for the 4 years they're with us. And so that's our application's very simple. It says, inspire us as to why you want to be in this building. Tell us what you want to get out of it. Tell us what you can contribute to us.
Are applications still open?
Applications are open right now.
Let's share with people how to, because I'm excited listening to you talk, and I've got some more questions, and I think there's going to be people in the audience that would say, I'd love to be considered for this. How do they apply?
So they apply at our website. It's lassonde.utah.edu. Lassonde is lassonde.utah.edu, and you'll see Lassonde Studios apply now and go in and apply. You still have to get into the University of Utah, so you have to make an application to get in, but our application is really, like I say, tell us what you want to get out of this. Tell us what you can contribute to this. I mean, one of the other applications I received the other day was a student, a sophomore in high school here in Salt Lake, said, I don't know what I want to do in the future, but I think this would be a great place to figure it out. And that's also a great answer, right? So come in and figure out what you want to do. So these are students that are coming from, you know, thinking about majoring in chemical engineering and business and fine arts. So we're pulling from all over the campus to do that.
You know, one of the nice things about an innovative center like this, I mentioned in the open, it's big, it's a bold idea. We do compete for the best students around the nation to come to the – we're a state university, yes, but we are open to folks from all over the country as well as all over the world. Are you seeing that impact the amount of applications and the quality of applications from outside of the state of Utah as well?
Yes, we're just starting to see it. Our program, you know, we've seen that evidenced in our business school and our MBA program and some of our other programs that we partner with where we're able to say, we're able to offer you as a student a unique experience here that you can't get at any other university. And so they may have been accepted to two or three other programs, but choose us because of the experience we've been able to offer them. And this building is kind of a next iteration of that, of what's an opportunity we can offer you as a student that you can't get anywhere else, that enhances your learning, that enhances your opportunities to get a better job or create your own job and come here to the University of Utah because you can't do that anywhere else. And that's that's really what our message is and what we're trying to do. And we're starting to see applications from very unusual places with students kind of finding that and applying here. And we also want, you know, students, the top high school students in the state of Utah,
Absolutely.
To consider staying here and coming to the University of Utah.
Yeah. You know, take us inside the tent a little bit. I mean, the building is the culmination of years of work. I suspect the process started somewhere down the line with yourself and a couple other leaders from the University of Utah, as well as Pierre, thinking about what should this center be? We're describing what it is, but how did we get to the point where you guys were on the same page and said, yes, this is, we've got it now. This is what we want to do.
In our 10th anniversary after starting the program in 2002 and 2012, Pierre Lassonde and the dean of the business school, Taylor Randall, asked me to do a review of the program, and so we looked at where we were. And at that point, we had moved ourselves into one of the top 25 programs in the country as a graduate program. We had about 1,000 students involved in it. We figured out how to help faculty start their companies, and we figured out how to help students start their companies. And so had two kind of things. One was the dean wanted to move the business school into a top 25 business school and asked each of us that were program directors within the business school, how do you contribute? How do you help me get us to a top 25 program? So that was in the back of my head. And at the same time, Pierre was saying to us, what else, if I gave you some additional funds, what else would you do with it? And first thing was I looked at, would I grow the existing programs? And I said, you know, that's really not what I would do. And so I started talking to students and said, I interviewed a half a dozen successful student startup companies and said, what would have made your idea move faster? What would have helped your business get to success faster? What would have helped you, you know, eliminate some of the failure points that you had? And so they started saying a couple things to us. They started saying, I need a place to find other students and other smart people that I can work with. And there's no place where I can walk in as a mechanical engineering student and find a business school student to help me sell my product, or to find an industrial design student to help me make my product look good. And so finding people was one. We were giving out these prototyping grants, and students just needed a place to make things. They just needed a physical place to construct things, whether it be digital assets or physical assets. We're a very gadget-centric, device-centric group at the University of Utah. And then the third thing was we were getting students launching company. They're like, I had these students, it's like, I'm living in the dorms, but I'm running my company off campus, and I'm trying to go to class. And God, if I just had a place where I could run my business out of. And so I thought about, what if we could combine all of those, and how would that play into this goal of making the business school a top 25 business school? And I thought, well, if we could create this unique space with a residential community where we could attract students from across the country, top performing students, to say, come to the University of Utah, do great things with us, and go get better jobs, that helps us lift the business school up, and it helps me accomplish the goal that Pierre had, which is, what more could we do to improve the student experience? And so all of those things came together with Taylor and I, and Taylor Randall and I, and Pierre Lassonde and I speaking about it, talking to President Pershing. His focus, as you know, has been the student experience and the Imagine You campaign, and we're the Imagine You, and then we're the do part, right? Imagine what you can do, and then do it at the Lassonde Studios.
If you're just joining us today, our guest is Troy D'Ambrosio, Executive Director of the Lassonde Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. You mentioned talking to students that had graduated and said, what could the U do to have expedited that, to make it easier for you and your company to succeed? You know, recruiting people is always, I mean, that's a top challenge for anybody, having the right people on the team. So it doesn't surprise me that was top on their list as well. And the collaboration that the Lassonde Studio offers, I think we may look back and by design look back and say that's the most powerful piece of the Lassonde Studio. It just makes it easy to collaborate. It makes it easy to meet other people. It makes it easier to recruit your team from some of your peers. Tell us some more student stories. Tell us a couple students that the University of Utah, with their current programs, has had a real positive impact on. I know the Governor's Office of Economic Development just this week or last week released the results of the Princeton Review. In that press release, they mentioned Mark Pittman, who you and I both know.
Right.
Mark's an amazing young man. He convinced me to write a personal check to help him out. In fact, that was the first outside check into his company. Tell us the story of Mark and how the University of Utah was able to help him.
So Mark is a JD MBA student at the University of Utah, came into my program, the Lausanne New Venture Development Program, which is where we take university faculty ideas and take students and put them with a team and help figure out what the commercial potential for that technology is. So Mark came in that program with us in the first year, worked on a project with us and helped do a very successful project, commercialization project. And out of that experience, he started thinking about, maybe I can do this myself. And so he came up with this idea. The company's called Blinksy. Very interesting idea. And came up with it. And what we were able to then do was, as he developed his idea, our seed funding program, he was able to get some grants to do the first prototyping out of the seed funding program. He was able to network with students at the University of Utah. It's a very high-tech idea. And he was able to find some technical help at the University of Utah. He was then able to enter some of our competitions. He was able to win some additional money in those competitions, but also build the network outside of the University of Utah of people, of investors, of other talent to help him do that. And so it's that kind of concentric circles of build a product, meet more people, add talent, meet more people, build your business. And so he's really gone from an idea to a business in about a year and a half, 2 years, and he's just closing a round of financing, and I think it's going to be a home run product. It's very, very unique, and it's got all the potential in the world. And Mark has also, I think, through that process, developed the skills of a tech CEO. He's had to pull in he's had to go find resources. He's had to pull in technical people. He's had to accomplish product development, hit milestones, and things that have allowed him to take his talent and focus it in a really unique way.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I'll share as well, I think you helped keep Mark motivated during some of the toughest periods. You know, as an investor who wrote an early check-in, that's part of my job, is to keep him doing great things, right? But the path is hard. And I remember there was a time that he was a little down. It was still too early for most outside investors. And there was a competition in Southern California around this time last year. It might have been like February of last year. And you sent him down for that competition. I don't think he won, but just being around other entrepreneurs, it kept his spirits up. You believed in him. I believed in him. Other people. And I think it's having that support network is so important. I think you guys, I mean, that's one example I know well, and I think you guys did very, very well. I introduced him to some executives at Google early on, and they were very, very bullish on the idea, right, which gives you hope, but you still got to build it. And so I think Mark, I agree with you. I think Mark's going to have a very big exit there. And we'll look back and say, oh, look at that overnight success. But I bet it'll be 7, 8, 9 years until we get to that day. So it's a tough journey. You know, you mentioned Mark's not a tech. You mentioned that he's grown into the role of a technical CEO. He's not a technical guy, which is the next subject I want to bring up. You and I were visiting this spring, and the topic was I was helping the Park City Angels and one of the incubators up there, Pandle Labs, coordinate a coding camp for entrepreneurs, and you were kind enough to help get the word out for us at the University of Utah. How important is it, in your mind, for business leaders today to know how to code, to at least be literate in that area?
Yeah, I don't know in the future and even now how you can really manage a business without some level of knowledge of how your website works, how your app works, how data analytics work in your business. And so we're trying to build programs in the business school and also just programmatically for students to get some experience around that. So we've had three app and website development workshops this fall where we say to students, just go understand a little bit about coding so you can at least be able to talk the talk. And if you're going to manage a team around your idea or you're going to go into business and you're going to have some digital assets there, you have to understand how to talk to the technical people and you have to understand enough about it. I think it's going to be one of the more challenging things going forward for students because the technology is changing so rapidly and the demand is going to be there. And so I think the university is doing a very good job, the business school in particular, of adapting to that. We've got a very successful Master's of Information Science degree, and they're adding new programs into that all the time. We're going to add a data analytics program into that. And so I think we're seeing that need to – you can't – it's like – You had to know accounting at one time to be able to manage a business, and then you know had to know accounting in Excel to manage a business, and now you're going to have to know accounting and app development and data analytics and web development and all of the things associated with running a business in this technology age.
Yeah, I use that exact analogy, Excel. Your hands are really tied as a business person if you don't know how to use Excel, because it is a tool that we use in the business world. And I think coding is quickly getting to that point. It gets very complicated very quickly, but the literacy level of coding is something that almost all of us can achieve. It's not that difficult. It's completely achievable. I would argue over summer, you can really pick up those skills. And for folks that are going into business that don't know how to code, figure out a way to carve out a couple hours a week. There's several resources. I'll share one or two of them on the air. Udemy.com is a website, and they have great intro coding classes. I learned how to code. I'm teaching my 13-year-old and my 15-year-old daughter how to code, because it is the literacy of the 21st century. So I think it's important. I'm glad that the University of Utah has programs to help folks with that as well. Want to start wrapping up and talking about some final things. One of the things, Troy, that I've been impressed as I've heard you talk about the vision for the University of Utah is it includes the other schools in the state of Utah. Is that an official role that you guys are doing, or does it just feel that's the spirit of collaboration that the University of Utah wants to have?
I think it's certainly the latter. It's the spirit of what we want to do, and we do have some kind of formal roles in our statewide business plan competition that we organize. Zions Bank is a sponsor with us and provides us funds that we can give to other schools to help them organize competitions on their campus. We've opened all of our workshops and our programs to other students in other campuses, but I think it was really an attitude that started with Jack Britton is let's make this open to all students. Let's not make this a rivalry. Let's make this a community. And interestingly enough, we have students that were high school friends, that one of them's at Utah State and one of them's at University of Utah and one of them's at Westminster, and they're on a startup team together. So if we just said, we have teams that compete in the BYU competition and compete in the Utah State competition because they have students that are on each team, right, that they go to school. So I think that's part of the whole community here. And one of the things that I hear from other universities that come through here and talk with us and talk about our programs is they say we would never be able to do that in our community, both on the campus community, how unique the University of Utah campus is, but the collaboration in the campus community, other campuses around the state, but also with the broader community, the Governor's Office of Economic Development, the Salt Lake City, people like yourself, Doug, that are in the community helping entrepreneurs all the time. And I think it's kind of that we're isolated out here between the coasts, and we've had to fend for ourselves, and you don't have the resources to fight. You have to collaborate to survive out here. And I think that's one of the things that is really embodied in our program. But it really comes from the way students want to operate.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. It's very we are an isolated community in some degrees. We are between the coast. It's a little tougher to build a business here, and it takes all of us kind of going in the same direction to make it happen. Including, speaking of rivalries, BYU. You know, they're a private university, obviously, but they were also very helpful when we were trying to get the word out about this coding camp. In fact, I think Scott Peterson, who's your counterpart there, I think, is that fair to say?
Yes.
At BYU. He was, hey, if the University of Utah is on board with this, we're on board with it as well. So you helped open the door for us with that as well. You know, normally I close by asking what's the future, some future-looking question. There is so much going on. So I'll close by, is there anything we haven't talked about today that's something you want to share with us?
No, I think just the invitation for students to come and get involved with us wherever they are in the state. We have high school programs now that we're starting, and for the students to look and apply to the Live in the LaSalle Studios and be part of it. So we're out there wanting to make sure you think about us before you make that choice of where you're going to go to school. And we have some really unique assets. We think you can do some incredible things with us. And, you know, for certain students, that's the right choice, and so we hope you'll look at us.
A lot of exciting stuff going on. I'm sure your brother is still bummed to this day that in 2002 you did not join him in his potash business, instead decided to focus at helping out the University of Utah. But I think the state's a better place, and certainly the University of Utah is a better place for your hard work over all these years. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Doug, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Troy D'Ambrosio is the executive director of the LaSalle Entrepreneur Institute at the University of Utah. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you, Ross. You can hear my entire interview with Troy on our website, kcpw.org. You can tweet me at Savvy Wells or at KCPW Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.